Our next case for argument this morning is Nationwide Mutual Fire Insurance against Falk.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Eric Haig. I represent the appellants. I'm going to skip the factual background in this case unless your honors request any information on that and get right to what I consider to be the meat of the appeal. I want to quickly hit on a few of the court's specific findings that I believe can be shown to be erroneous, implausible, illogical, and not supported by the record. The first one is a very simple...
None of those is the legal standard. You have to show they're clearly erroneous. That's the legal standard.
Yes, Your Honor. The very first one is a statement the court made at page 6 of the court's decision, also page 6 of the short appendix. The court stated that Larson, the driver of the van, Larson moved left to avoid a collision. This is simply, absolutely erroneous. It defies Larson's own testimony. No one said this. No one implied this. Mr. Larson stated, in fact, the opposite, that he never saw the Acura before impact. The first thing he noticed was a bang and a noise from the right side of the car, and then he was pushed left involuntarily and trying not to go left. He was going towards the median, going towards oncoming traffic on the other side of the interstate.
Excuse me, would you mind pointing the exact place where you...
The court's...
Down at the bottom of that page, it says he moved left to avoid a collision, but the timing after he's already said at the top of that page that Larson was moving slightly to the right, the vehicles collided. Then at the bottom of the page it says her excessive speed also caused Larson to fail to observe her approach.
And that's the part that I'm talking about, Your Honor. And I'll get to the speed issue, but he says he didn't observe her approach and then he moves left to avoid a collision. He didn't move left to avoid a collision. He moved left after a collision involuntarily, and he discussed at length how he was fighting for his life to try to get back to the right. At page 21 and 22 and page 42 of the trial transcript, he discussed that very phenomenon. He denied ever being cut off by the Acura, specifically denied it 6 different times.
Well, don't you think, though, I mean, this very, very unfortunate accident is one that didn't leave much behind in the way of concrete information. There's some skids, there's some experts. You need a trier of fact to resolve what happened. And one trier of fact is likely to do as good a job as the next, even though they may not all be the same. Judge Shabazz sat as that trier of fact. And it's very hard for us sitting here without, you know, skid marks in front of us and experts. We're not, that's the point of the clear error standard. You know, you give the benefit of the doubt to the trier of fact.
I understand that, Your Honor.
And so I'm not just necessarily disagreeing with you that somebody else might have found either that Ms. Scatrod wasn't negligent or maybe that it was 50-50 or many other possibilities strike me as quite plausible on this record, but Judge Shabazz picked one of them.
Well, I don't believe that it was a plausible result, Your Honor. Clearly erroneous is a difficult standard, but there has to be some...
But how can you argue that there's absolutely no negligence on her part when she's passing on the right? The witnesses do say she's driving fast, you know, whether... And Judge Shabazz, I think, rightly doesn't actually put a number on it, but...
He does.
You know, that section... No, he doesn't say it's 100 miles an hour.
He said 75 miles per hour.
Well, but I mean, he doesn't take the witness... What I'm trying to say is he doesn't take the 100 miles an hour number that the witnesses said. So he's, in a sense, making a finding favorable to her when he pulls it back to 75. It could have been 74, depending on what one of those other experts had said. But passing on the right to begin with as a matter of Wisconsin law and as a matter of good driving practice is a bit riskier a maneuver than passing on the left. Wisconsin actually has a law about that.
Well, Your Honor, the likelihood from the evidence was that she had just merged on from an on-ramp, which had just ended 120 feet before this. So she was coming from the right, and there was no way she could have come from the left.
Well, that's inconsistent with another of the district judge's findings, which was that she was weaving through traffic. But in any event, seems to me irrelevant. If you enter from an on-ramp, you can't pass on the right.
Well, that was not a basis.
I don't understand how, when this car is engaged in actively violating state law by both driving too fast and passing on the right, one can say that this had nothing whatever to do with the ensuing accident.
Well, first of all, no one has ever argued and no one has said in this case that passing on the right was negligent. No one argued that.
It was the source of the problem, and it's also illegal.
It's not in the record as anyone saying it or arguing it. What the court said was that because
it is a fact. I mean, look, Judge Shabazz does note the whole outline, and I'm not sure that we need in the record the fact that there's a Wisconsin statute that says the operator of a vehicle overtaking another vehicle proceeding in the same direction shall pass to the left thereof at a safe distance. Now, do people pass on the interstate highways in the right? Sure, they do all the time. You can go out. There was a fatal accident yesterday on Interstate 55, but... Anyway, the main point is we don't need to take all of this apart. Judge Shabazz describes the overall situation, and he comes to the conclusion that it adds up to some negligence on her part.
Well,
and at some level, that's really is that how can that be clearly erroneous?
His rationale is that her speed caused Larson not to see her. Larson testified he didn't look because he wasn't planning to go right.
Mm-hmm.
So how can the speed be causal if he doesn't look because he's not intending to go to the right?
Does the record show whether the van Larson was driving had a right-hand mirror?
Well, he testified that he looked out the rear-view mirror, right mirror, left mirror.
Okay, so there's testimony that it did.
Yes,
okay.
And there was a visibility assessment done by Trooper Parrott showing that the Acura would have been visible.
Mm-hmm.
Larson's testifying that he looks all these mirrors occasionally, but he had no purpose of going right. He said it unequivocally. He was not intending to go right.
Mm-hmm.
So her speed is irrelevant. Whether she's going 65 miles an hour, 75, or 85, he's going to go in her lane and hit her because he's not making a calculation based on any
But, you know, I think what
speed.
The district judge was thinking is if she had been driving, the speed limit there, I believe, is 65. If she'd been driving at the speed limit, she might have executed this maneuver in a more careful way. She might look, when you're passing somebody in the right, you can see the vehicle next to you, and the amount of time you could work it out if you are a physics buff, you know, that it takes her car to move from the rear fender up to almost clear of the car is very, very small at that speed.
Well,
so had she been driving slower, maybe she would have pulled a little further over toward the shoulder.
All I can tell you is no one offered the opinion that she would have had time to do that, could have done that.
Before she ever starts the passing maneuver is what I'm saying.
That she would have gone towards the right shoulder?
Yeah. I mean, look, if a vehicle is in the lane next to you, a lot of people will give it a little margin before they pass.
Sure. And we don't know whether she was 3 feet over into the right lane.
No, we don't.
Or 1 foot over into the right lane.
Right.
You do know she was in her own lane. mm-hmm. going past a guy who never saw her and never intended to move into her lane, who hit her.
Mm-hmm.
Lookout. Court noted that each party lacked the lookout. There's no evidence of that because their whole case was proving that he didn't go into the right lane. They didn't put on any evidence that, hey, she saw him in the right lane and didn't react, because that defied their whole case. Their whole case was he didn't go in the right lane.
Yeah.
That's why there's no evidence in the record to show that the lookout was improper. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hagg. Mr. Elke.
Thank you. Good morning, judges. May it please the court. My name is Stephen Elke. I represent the United States in this case, and I was one of the attorneys below. Before I get to the facts of this case, the United States does believe that there is a jurisdictional issue here that has not been addressed this morning, and it's sort of a confusing record and so on. But the bottom line is, it is our view that when the plaintiff filed a notice of dismissal in this court while the case was pending, and simultaneously filed a notice of appeal in the district court, that...
Yes, I'm puzzled by that, I must say. I mean, what case do you rely on for the proposition that a notice of appeal can ever be disregarded? There are sometimes difficult to work through rules governing when a district court has authority. But your proposition is that a notice of appeal somehow doesn't count if the district judge had no authority to act. And the rule doesn't say that. Your brief doesn't cite any authority for that proposition. Do you have any authority for that proposition?
No, Your Honor, I don't. And
so why should we adopt a jurisdictional rule that has no support whatsoever in the rule and none in the case law?
Well, I can tell the court, obviously, that I looked for a case, and certainly if I had found one, I would have cited it to you. All I can say is that common law development, and this is that case, and it's a matter of logic. The court may disagree, but
I don't understand the logic of it, and it's lawyer talk that no normal person would use to say that a perfectly obvious piece of paper filed in the district court for the purpose of contesting the district court's opinion is, quote, a nullity. No normal person talks about something being a nullity. That's not a matter of logic either.
Well, I don't mean to argue with you, Judge, obviously, but our thinking was that we needed to address the jurisdictional issue, and it seemed to us that if a notice of appeal has been filed and the case is then in the Court of Appeals and is no longer in the district court, ship has sailed, so to speak, to use a metaphor, and that the filing of the second notice of appeal, therefore...
Yeah, if there were anything to that, you'd think in the past 216 years somebody would have noticed it.
Well, the other thing I would point out is this court is constantly faced with cases in which two or more notices of appeal have been filed. We frequently, if you look at our orders, will dismiss a couple of the docket numbers just because they're superfluous, but I don't know of any rule that says if you really feel like filing a lot of notices of appeal, not that I encourage it, but I don't think you get punished for it.
Well, obviously,
you do get punished. We collect $205 for all of them.
Obviously, I'll move on. The clearly erroneous standard, I think, is acknowledged to apply in this case at this point. And what you had below were two different versions of how this accident occurred. One version is that Ms. Scatroot is weaving in and out of traffic, going excessively fast, that she clips off Mr. Larson in the center lane. And that
now, why do you make nothing of the fact that the passing was on the right? Since that seems to be the genesis of this. The reason for the no pass on the right rule is because you can't see somebody coming up on the right. That's normally in the car's blind spot.
It may have been an error.
You pass on the left, then you can see who's on the right. When somebody passes on the right, you're going to get this kind of problem. This is the reason why that rule exists.
It may have been another argument to make. All I can tell the court is that the main argument and the proof below was that Ms. Scatroot was driving excessively fast and erratically, and that Mr. Larson was in the center lane, that she cut him off, and that there were skidding back and forth. she is unable to control her vehicle because she's going so fast, and a driver, of course, is required to maintain management and control of their vehicle throughout.
Well, of course, there's all this testimony that by the time once the clip occurs between the front right and the rear left, she's done. I mean, she could have been driving 60 miles an hour. That's still pretty fast. I mean, and at those speeds, even if you assumed both of them driving 60 miles an hour, the torque, that goes onto the car is going to spin her around. It just is.
Well, you have an inexperienced driver. She'd only had her license for 3 months at the time she has.
That's not negligent, to have your license for only 3 months. Why don't we focus on the things that are arguably negligent?
Well, as we point out in our brief, though, Judge, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin has held that a fact finder can look at the inexperience of a driver and draw inferences from that, and that a person who has more driving experience could perhaps be driving 65.
If she had been a retired NASCAR race driver and done otherwise exactly what she did, you would be making exactly the same arguments.
The bottom line here, Your Honor, is that it is a clearly erroneous standard, and even if this court or some other court would have apportioned the negligence differently, there are certainly facts in the record upon which Judge Shabazz based his finding. He cites to them in his decision, and this court should not, I would suggest, conclude that his decision was clearly erroneous, even if this court, if you had been sitting as the trier of fact, might have reached a different conclusion. And on that ground, this decision should be affirmed. Unless there are any other questions, I don't have anything further than what is already in the briefs.
Mm-hmm. Fine.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Haig?
Yes, Your Honor.
You have about 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Briefly, the court noted that the failure of lookout contributed to her inability to control her vehicle. That's simply illogical. How could her failure of lookout contribute to her inability to control her vehicle?
Because if you know something is coming, you can take precautions easier than if you don't find out what's happening till your wheels are already spinning out. This is not really a problem of logic, counsel.
Well,
it gets down to when the lookout should have started, and I think you're starting at the moment of impact, and at that point the car's hit the van, I should say, is behind her, but I'm not sure the district judge meant that in such a limited way, because if you start the failure to look out the moment before she starts passing the van on the right, then you have a whole different perspective.
But what? No one has said what she did wrong in terms of failure to look out before the pass.
Well,
and no one said that she did anything wrong before the pass in terms of failure to look out.
If it's hard to see, I suppose it's too late. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.
Thank you, Your Honor.